Welcome, everybody. I am Tammy Govea. I am the executive director of Tobacco Free Mass, which is a coalition that's existed in Massachusetts for about 20 years, and we are comprised of 50 organizations throughout the state. And so we're the advocates on the ground working with the chairman to push bills that we think are really important. We're working on tobacco-free campuses, so working with institutions to enact policies that will really help reduce social norms around tobacco use and nicotine addiction. So really excited all of you are here this morning with us. I know it's early, so grateful that you're here. So first, I'd like to talk a little bit about why we picked this title, why 50 Shades of Grey. And I think you've already heard a little bit about it from my previous colleagues who spoke, and you'll hear more about it from both John and Karina. But basically, the industry puts us in these gray areas all the time with the products that they create, with the practices that they implement, the marketing, the packaging, the free speech stuff that happens here, corporate rights to free speech and that kind of thing. So we felt like it's really important for us to shine a spotlight on what the industry is doing to put us as public health professionals in this double bind constantly. And what ends up happening sometimes is we end up working against each other. And so it's really helpful, I think, for us to just have a conversation about what does it look like with the industry tactics and what they're doing and how that impacts the work that we're doing locally, in the state, nationally, and internationally. And that's why you'll hear from folks at the local, state, national, and international level. So the other reason why we picked the title that we picked is, you know, the work we do, we think it's pretty sexy. We think we do a lot of really fun things. And also, I like to fight fire with fire. So if the tobacco industry is able to use sex appeal and glamour, why can't we to entice people to come to our session? So that was the other reason why we picked the title that we picked. So I'm glad you're here, and I'm glad that you were duped by our title. No, just kidding. Is this how it works? Okay. So I know this is going to make the chairman laugh, because during our hearing on the e-cig bill a couple weeks ago, we showed this ad. And this is exactly what the industry is putting out there. They're basically saying F you to public health, F you to public health policies, F you to just protecting the health of our children and of community members. So this is, that's your mom. It's my mom, too, actually. It's my mom as well. So we're talking about e-cigarettes. We're talking about cigars, which have already been covered, and these other tobacco products that look, smell, taste, and sell as cheaply as candy. So that's what we're talking about here. So what is sort of their strategy? And there are documents on this that say that they want to kind of drive a wedge between public health folks. So this is really taken right from their playbook. And so I think, again, it's important for us to shine a spotlight on what their playbook looks like and how it's continuing to be used and replicated. So oftentimes what we'll see is legislation that's punitive and demonizing of smokers. So exactly to Cheryl's point, you know, in public health, we're not here to punish. We're here to educate. We're here to enforce compliance. And it's really about protecting health. It's not about punishing people or making people feel badly. They use youth to advance their own gains, and you'll hear quite a bit about this from Karina, the story that happened in Rhode Island with the e-cig bill, pitting us against each other oftentimes. Manipulative of government leaders and public sentiment. So exactly what Cheryl was talking about, you know, sending folks to sit in on these local Board of Health hearings and not really saying anything, but just sort of sitting there with this sort of authority of, you know, in power. And then its scope is global. So you've probably seen pictures like this, you've seen items like these in your own communities, but I just found this to be really compelling to me, you know, just the pictures of markers and gum and lipstick and how much it really resembles tobacco products that are emerging. And, you know, we've talked already quite a bit about the pricing, the flavoring, the marketing, so I'm not going to really go into too much details about that because I'd love for us to really have a conversation and have lots of opportunity for questions. But I do want to share a story that our past Commissioner of Public Health has shared with us, which is that she was very curious about these products, very concerned about these products. She has twin daughters. She went to the store, bought a couple of these cigars, brought them home, and her girls from across the room said, "Wow, is that candy?" And she's like, "It couldn't have happened any. I couldn't have planned this any better." But that's exactly what happened, and that's exactly what we see. And I have two kids. I ask them the same things, and I'm sure you've spoken to your son about these products that are out there and what the industry does. So I just find that, you know, pretty important for us to sort of be thinking about these stories and how they're impacting our children every single day. So the other story that I want to share with you is a little politically wonky, but bear with me because I think it's a little bit telling. It can be helpful to some of the work that you might be doing in your state. Earlier this year, Massachusetts passed a transportation financing bill, and that included a $1 increase on our cigarettes. So now we're second in the country for having the highest cigarette tax rate. It's $3.51 per pack of cigarettes. And we were also fortunately and very gratefully able to get an increase on other tobacco products. So we went from I think 90% to 210% of wholesale, which is really exciting for us because one of our major goals as a coalition, as Tobacco Free Mass, and probably even at the department, although I'm not speaking for you, but is to get that parity with other tobacco products with cigarettes. The area that was left out on the table and was alluded to in Cheryl's comments, and I know the chairman laughed, but it's true, is the cigar area. We were not able to get our message across that there are these non-premium cigars, these machine-made cigars that are cheap, that are candy-flavored, that are you know, that our kids are using. And we see the trends in Massachusetts. Kids in Massachusetts are using cigars more than they're using cigarettes. But that was really difficult for us to make that case with the legislature. And, you know, we were up there, we bought different candy-flavored cigars, put it on our lit drop, went around to every single member in the House and Senate with this cigar on there. And when we go back and have conversations with staff, they're really like, oh, yeah, that we opened that thing up and it smelled like pineapple and that was our air freshener. No word of a lie. That's what one of the Senate staff said to me. And so now they remember us as, oh, you're the ones who gave us those cigars. And so it's slowly penetrating. But, again, we weren't able to make the case with folks that really this is impacting our young people. And so many of what I heard from folks in the building and some of your colleagues is that for some folks, they're not believing it, that the industry is doing this work and that they are able to get our kids to use tobacco products in these little cigars. So we have a little bit of work to do. So through the budget process, we try to get this cigar packaging. Well, first we wanted the tax, and that wasn't going to happen. So then the cigar packaging that Cheryl talked about, the policy that we borrowed from Maryland and has been instituted in a number of municipalities throughout the state, we were looking at doing that at a statewide level. But the bill had problems with it because it was taken just from a local and applied to the state level. It didn't have anti-preemption language, which is a huge concern to us because, as was already described, in Massachusetts, we have very strong local boards of health with a lot of local authority. And so that bill did not pass, and now there's another bill that does have the anti-preemption language in it. We're really excited to be working with the chairman and with folks up at the Healthcare Finance Committee to try to push that along. But, you know, we had a lot of strategy discussions around, do we support this bill even though it might impact us at the local level, or do we not support this bill because in principle it's exactly where we want to be going. And so that wasn't necessarily something that the industry did to us, but indirectly, because their lobbying efforts were so effective at convincing the leadership and legislators that we were talking about premium cigars when we weren't in terms of the tax, we were indirectly impacted. So the other false choice that we're oftentimes put in, and it seems like every single year there is legislation that's filed to punish young people for possessing or using tobacco products. And I come from the world of addiction. You know, I've been doing prevention for about 15 years. And for me, it's always about educating and helping people and getting people the services that they need and the cessation services that they need to quit. So it's never about really punishing people, because that's not really helpful, and that's not what we do in public health. And so I put this picture up to show that, you know, it's important for us to really pull apart any legislation that comes up and look at it not only at its face value, which is what oftentimes the public is doing. They're just saying, oh, this looks like a really good bill, no big deal. Yeah, youth shouldn't be having access to cigarettes. We should be punishing them. So I've had to do a lot of conversations with folks out in the public to say, you know what? The industry is our target, not young people. The industry is our target, not retailers. The industry is our target, not parents and not teachers. And so I think if we're sort of thinking about that as we're looking at policy and legislation, then we'll be able to be effective in making them nervous, making them scared, and having them use our names and say that they take exception with what we say. So I put this picture up for a couple different reasons. We have this young person who's holding Newport cigarettes, which is made by Lorillard. And lo and behold, Blue is the owner of Lorillard. And the tagline is, why quit when you can just switch to BZ cigarettes? And that's exactly where the industry is going. So I just think it's really important to kind of keep reflecting on that, because you will, as public health people, be put to task by folks who say, but you're a public health person, don't you want us to quit smoking? And that is a double bind for us. Because there are some people who are able to taper down or are able to quit, but that's not what this story is about. This story is about how is it going to play out in the next 5 to 10 years with our young people who are starting to use e-cigarettes, who have never smoked tobacco before, who have never used a nicotine delivery product or snooze or any of those other tobacco products, and now they're starting to. We don't want another generation that's addicted to tobacco or to nicotine. The other area is that in the state, we bring in $1 billion in master settlement and taxes. And less than 0.5% of our funding goes to the tobacco control program. And to us in this state, that's unconscionable. And unfortunately, many of you are sitting here thinking, well, that's what's happening in my state, and that's happening in this state. And it's happening in pretty much every single state, with the exception of maybe 2 or 3, where our tobacco prevention and control program is so severely underfunded. And the industry is starting to figure out ways that they can start to go after some of the tax money and use it to their benefit. So what's happening recently is there is an illicit trade commission that was put together to look at the impact of illicit trade and what's going on, especially because we just raised our tobacco tax. And now they're arguing that some of the taxes that comes into the state should be used to track and look at illicit trade. And we haven't really talked about this yet within the coalition, but I look at that, again, as a false choice, because really the money should be going to preventing people from using in the first place, should be protecting our kids, and should be helping people who want to quit get access to the services that they need to quit. So I just want to wrap up. I think what's important is just for us to recognize that the industry is still there. They're still out there. They're still using a lot of the same old tactics. It's important for us to recognize when we're put into these double binds. I think it's really important for us to be talking to each other. And as a coalition director, I would love to connect with anybody else who is in a similar position in another state, you know, after this session over lunch or whatever. Because that's actually how I learned from my counterparts and through other New England states that all of this stuff was going on with e-cigarettes. And that's how, in part, we were, as a coalition, able to sort of stay out in front of it. So when the chairman said, hey, we're filing this bill, we were already there. We were already thinking about it and ready to go. We didn't have to sort of do the research. And always just remember who the target really, really is. It's the industry. It's not our kids. It's not our parents. It's not our teachers. It's not even our retailers. It's the industry. And that's it. This is my contact information if you need it for future reference.